The following program is furnished by its producer, host, and sponsors.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. We're live in the studios, and you're listening to Health in 30 on WRCR and 1300 Radio Rockland, and it's streaming live online. I'm your host, registered nurse Barbara Ficarra. Health in 30 brings you 30 minutes of the latest health and medical news and information with leading guest medical experts. Today, we'll be talking with Dr. Mike McGee, author and senior fellow for health policy at the Center for Aging Services Technologies of the American Association of Homes and Services for the Aging, and editor of healthcommentary.org. Dr. McGee recently testified before the U.S. Senate Special Committee on Aging and the Senate's Medical Technology Caucus. Dr. McGee discussed his vision for a new home-centered healthcare system anchored by technology. Call in with any questions for Dr. McGee. The number is 845-624-1300. And joining us now to talk about home-centered healthcare is Dr. Mike McGee. Hi, Dr. McGee. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, how are you? Nice to join you.
Thank you so much for joining us and being here to share your vision with this topic of home-centered healthcare. Dr. McGee, before we delve into this topic, can you just share with the listeners a little bit about your passion that has brought this topic to the forefront of health?
Well, let me just mention that, things seem to be ideal right now to take a good fresh look at health care, and that's because we see so many things changing at the same time. I mean, in our lifetime, the whole health consumer movement has taken off, and people nowadays, two decades after first launching this revolution, are very comfortable with the notion of making their own health care decisions. At the same time, I think their caregivers are doing the best that they can to assist in providing information to allow these decisions to be made. It's a complex world out there because, on the one hand, we have chronic diseases that require us to manage them properly so that hypertension doesn't lead to strokes and so that cancers don't take our lives when screening could prevent them. On the other hand, I think we are all thinking that if we were able to get ahead of the curve a bit and plan ahead a bit, that we might be able to prevent some of these diseases from ever occurring. So in many ways, we're trying to do two things at once. We're trying to manage the burden of chronic disease while we're trying to move the entire healthcare system to prevention, and I think that that's a pretty complex undertaking. Prevention is really based on planning, and I don't mean planning late in the day. I mean planning that would begin almost with conception, with the idea that if you were planning to have a baby, you'd look after your own diet and nutrition and so forth in the hopes of having the healthiest baby you possibly could. And when that baby was born, you'd be thinking 100 years out, and you'd be planning for all the different things that would need to be done to allow that baby to reach their full human potential. So prevention is really about 100-year-long forward-looking planning. Now, that type of planning needs to be done in the home. It can't be done in a hospital. It can't be done in a doctor's office. It has to be done in the home within the family structure and within the community. And it also requires, I think, that to make good decisions and to plan ahead, you need to be supported by doctors and nurses and other caregivers. And the question is, in our busy day-to-day world, how's that possible? And I think one of the answers is to leverage the new information technologies so that our families, which are now three and four generations deep, are communicating with each other, and so that even if one has a busy workaday world, one's able to keep in contact with the healthcare team and get input and advice and help with information and decision-making from the care team. And that means that we would really leverage all the new mobile phones and all of the different types of graphic interfaces and all of the different types of computers and WiMAX and cable, so that we were almost in complete connection with each other all of the time, regardless of whether we're moving around or whether we're sitting at home. I think that that's part of it, but also we're now reaching a point where there are a variety of different sensors now that can pick up our vital signs continuously, our blood pressure, our temperature, our pulse, our weight, and are also able to know what where we are position-wise within the home, whether we've showered, whether or not we've eaten properly, whether we've exercised that day. There is a lot of data within the next 5 years that will be automatically able to be transmitted with our permission to the doctor. On the other side of the equation, I think the doctors and nurses are beginning to organize as teams, and hopefully in the future we'll get paid for not only analyzing the data that's coming in, but coaching us and advising us based on the results of that analysis of the data. So think about it this way, a primary loop that begins at the home with information flowing out electronically to your care team and coming the other way 24/7, coaching and encouragement and analysis and help as we need it coming the other way. So there's this continuous loop that would be helpful. Nowadays, the only loop we have is the loop that goes from hospital to doctor's office and back to hospital. Homes are almost an afterthought. We think of homes as where the heart is, but there's no health there right now. We need to get health into the home. That's right. And remember, nowadays, 50% of 60-year-olds have a parent alive. This means that a regular American family now is four generations deep. There's you and I, there's a parent, a grandparent, a child, sometimes a grandchild. So there could be four or five generations of complexity with people moving around and people economically stressed. It's hard to keep things together. So we need to act much more smartly in terms of follow through and adherence to different plans. But the question is, how do we do that if everybody's moving in opposite directions? And the only answer to coordinating this more properly and to beginning to get ahead of the disease curve and try to avoid diseases is to do things virtually, to use information systems more intelligently so that we're able, wherever we are, to be in contact with our loved ones, and so that we're able to keep up with plans that are pretty complicated. In 20% of American homes now, we have informal family caregivers. Almost all of these are third-generation women, women between 45 and 65, who are trying to keep a parent or a grandparent healthy at the same time as they're involved with their children and grandchildren's lives. And these mostly women are tearing their hair out at this point. It's very hard to keep up. So we need to reorganize the home and re-engineer it so that it's better coordinated and it's a good center place for health rather than a place that's overwhelmed by disease.
How does the technology work? Is that... has that been delved into? For instance, with the vital signs, how is that being monitored from patient to computer?
Well, there's a lot of different software and hardware products that are in development that will come on the market at around 2010. It's estimated that by 2012, there'll be $75 billion in purchases of this type of equipment. And it's everything from sensor-embedded clothing to different types of wristwatches and to different types of now mobile devices that you can connect to you in one way or another, and it can read what's going on inside your body. You know, almost if you remember back with Star Trek and the doctor on that show would wave a wand over you and it would read what's going on. Well, we're not all the way there, but we are closer to there than we used to be. And in addition to that, in the homes themselves, we now have the ability, because sensors and computers are so relatively inexpensive, to embed these miniature computers in a lot of different things and to allow the computers to talk to each other. So while this sounds very futuristic, what we're talking about is being able inside of the home itself to get a lot of the information that you used to only be able to get in a doctor's office. For example, if you're a diabetic now, you're obviously able to draw your own blood through a pin stick. And that's been here for quite some time. It's more accurate now, it's less painful, and it's easier to use. But now also, when you prick your finger and that little drop of blood goes into the little handheld machine, the machine automatically, electronically sends the result to your doctor's office. That's something new. It means that what used to be done in the doctor's office, the blood drawing, can now be done in the home, but in addition, the doctor can get the result immediately, which is important in terms of helping you monitor your diabetes. So if you take that example and you multiply at times many other types of ailments, what we're going to find within 5 years is that most of what you used to go to the doctor's office for, you can now do in your home itself.
And I would imagine someone with hypertension who needs to monitor their blood pressure as well would be, this would be an ideal situation for them to really keep on target with the doctor, you know, with spikes in their blood pressure, then they could monitor their medications better. Because when somebody goes to the doctor now, it might not be, you know, they may have one visit, and if they don't check their blood pressure at home consistently until the next visit, they may run into some type of problem if it increases to, you know,
well,
a great extent.
One of the things I think that these devices are designed to do is make it easier and easier for the consumer to use them without really having a huge knowledge base. Mm-hmm. These will really be almost self-monitoring. And the main thing that consumers will do is allow not only their use, but the transmission of their data to people with privacy controls. Most of the studies now show that patients are willing to give data to their physicians, but they're not willing to give the data to hardly anyone else. They don't like to give it to hospitals. They don't like to give it to employers. They don't like to give it to insurance companies. But they will share it with their doctors, and if you're willing to share the information with your doctors, then I do believe that we could interact with each other, that the people and the people caring for each other could interact with each other much, much more efficiently than they're currently doing. For example, when my wife was taking care of her mother who had dementia, in order to have anything done, she had to put her mother into the car, take her to the doctor, really almost take up an entire day for a doctor's office visit, and what she got out of it was very little. Nowadays, you should be able to do that increasingly from your home setting and not inconvenience the entire family in the process.
It's so exciting to have this knowledge base that you share with the listeners, because it makes sense going from point A to point B. This is the next step in healthcare. Like you said, when you get to the doctor's office, you know, if you're not gaining the knowledge that you need at that moment, because they're...
Well, I do think these are very exciting times,
yeah.
And you really see it now with the younger generation who are, you know, grew up with this technology,
right,
and are very comfortable with the notion of communicating anywhere with anyone. Not only have the computers gotten smaller and are handheld and are easier to use, but in addition to that, They also are able, because of the global positioning devices and because of their ability to connect to the internet, they're able to not only provide us with information that we ask for, but almost able to sense our question before we ask the question. And I think the idea of tying personalized research to consumer growth and improvement in the home setting is going to create a reality for us maybe 10 years from now where patients are able to anticipate what could happen to them and actually prevent it from happening. That would be a huge change in healthcare. There is, I think, a strong reservoir of trust and confidence that we have in both our doctors and our nurses. That said, this information is extraordinarily sensitive. And once we get into the genomic era, it's going to become even more sensitive. But my feeling is that those kind of challenges, who we allow access to the information, can be handled through technology. We're doing it now for financial systems, and we seem to have been able to work our way through that. I believe we'll be able to do it for healthcare information
right.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some people who may not want to share their information with anyone, but they still, even if they don't want to share it, could organize it better. It could be available from any site that they're at, no matter where it is, around the country, around the state, around the world. And it could also have it organized in a way that would allow you to plan ahead and to know what's coming up next and what you need to do. So I think even if we weren't going to share it with each other, and I believe we will, most of us will, there still could be a lot of progress made just by better organizing the information.
Right. And I think a lot of people do like using that computer. They like that whole interactive process, even with the health websites. When they're in on that site, they want to be involved with it. They don't want to just go to something and leave. They want to share their opinions, and they want to be involved with it. So this would be a great thing for them to be involved in their own health and have everything organized in a system that can go back and forth between doctor, nurse, and patient, and it's a great thing. So,
well, I think for a lot of people, they're still thinking that in order to use information systems, you'll have to be sitting at a keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as we've begun to see with the iPhone, we're really catching up and making these devices simpler to use, and in the future they'll become more affordable as well. We're also coming very close to be able to use voice activation. You see it now with a lot of cell phones and hand-free devices where you basically can give an order you'll get a response. You see it with the telephone trees when you call up and try to get service. Now they tell you enter your number or say your number, and the computer on the other side is able to interpret your voice and hear what you said. So I think that a lot of us sort of are thinking, well, this new technology is all right for people who are highly educated and all right for people who have a lot of money, but it's never going to become universal. It's never going to become pervasive throughout the community. I think that that's wrong for two reasons. First of all, I think that technology is getting to a point where we're getting well beyond issues of not having enough education to use it or not being able to type. I don't think you'll need to be able to do either of those things in the future. Secondly, I believe we have the ability in this country to target the technology to go first to those who are most in need. And I think that this type of technology could be enormously useful to that underaged single mother of two who's in dangerous section of West Philadelphia and can't get her kids out and across town to see the doctor, but could talk to a nurse via a handheld device. That type of connection made purposefully could really help that young mother and her children and could break the cycle of isolation and poverty and despair. So I think that most of the public is still underestimating how fast things have improved with this technology and what its true capabilities are. I think the outcomes are, number one, there is, since the White House conference on aging a couple of years ago, a much better understanding of the fact that we cannot address the issues of aging without addressing the entire healthcare system, because you cannot really help those over 65 or those over 85 without helping those who are caring for them who are 55 or those who are in the first and second generation between 0 and 50. We require sort of a comprehensive multi-generational fix on healthcare, and I think that's now well understood by legislators. Secondly, I think that we now appreciate that in order to make progress with preventive healthcare, you have to have both the ability to move the information with the people, and everyone needs to be insured. So there is, I think, this general understanding now that we need universal access and universal insurance. How we get there, I think, is still being debated, but I think it's appreciated that that's what's required right now. And thirdly, I think more and more, right, we're not all the way there yet, but I think more and more people understand that in a very driven, mobile, capitalistic society that is increasingly stressed economically, we cannot make the type of jump that we need to universal health care without somehow leveraging new technology for efficiency and cost control. Certainly, more and more individuals themselves are going to bear the burden of their decisions. And we have to somehow take advantage of the technology and also reward individuals and families that stay healthy and reward their doctors and nurses if prevention takes hold, because prevention can save a lot of money. If you prevent disease, you can save a lot of money, but currently doctors get paid for taking care of disease, not for creating prevention. So I think we're making good progress. I think the legislators are certainly tuned into this issue at this point, and I think if we're looking at big fixes, at a more universal approach to healthcare system in the United States and a move from intervention to prevention, I think everybody now understands that technology has an important role to play.
Yeah, it's so exciting. I mean, there's so much technology out there in the whole business world, and then to bring this into the home, into the healthcare system for patients and families, it's just the next step. It makes great sense, and thank you so much for sharing that. For upcoming shows, keep a check at healthin30.com and for more information. Listeners, don't forget, if you have a health question, send it in. Go to contact us at healthin30.com, and the experts will answer it. Share your ideas, concerns, and suggestions. Go to healthin30.com. I'm Barbara Ficarra. Have a great week.
AM 1300, WRCR, Spring Valley.
AP Radio News. I'm Ross Simpson. A day of remembrance. President Bush, the presidential candidates, civil rights leaders, and many other Americans are pausing today to remember Martin Luther King Jr. It's the 40th anniversary of his assassination. Speaking at the Lorraine Motel where King was gunned down in Memphis, John McCain said he made a mistake in not initially backing the King holiday.
We can be slow as well to give greatness its due. A mistake I myself made long ago. When I voted against a federal holiday in memory of Dr. King.
Hillary Clinton, also at the site of the King assassination, says she was a college student when she heard that Dr. King had been assassinated in Memphis.
I walked into my dorm room and took my book bag and hurled it across the room. It felt like everything had been shattered. Like we would never be